So for the audience, both Hans and I have been invited
to try exciting. Out robo-taxis.
Yeah.
That's so Woo-hoo. Fun, huh? So will you be here on Sunday?
This is the challenge. Are they going to launch on Sunday? There's they always said, this question mark.
It said the 22nd on the email.
Yeah, but they change these things all the time.
It said subject to change.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it is Friday. I mean, like, it's less than 48 hours from the launch. Because it starts at 6 a.m.
Yeah, would you wait to tell people to come that long if it then wasn't going to actually happen? Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you know, if something happens between now and then, it'll get delayed. But maybe as long as something bad doesn't happen between now and then, it'll go off. I would say that with my luck, it absolutely will happen on Sunday. If I don't come, it will happen on Sunday. If I do come, it will be delayed.
Yeah, so stay your ass
home.
That's
how it works.
Stay your ass home. Give the wife a nice birthday on Monday, and just let's move on, okay? And then maybe the following week, you calm down. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm really excited. I still don't know what the geofence area is going to be, though. So.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard. Has anybody said?
I haven't seen anything besides the rumored maps.
The rumored maps being the ones that are South Austin, south of the river.
Right? The one that I saw was the one that had the red outline around more like Austin proper and then the yellow outline around the Austin metro area, I guess.
Do you have the map?
No, it's just one that I've seen on X.
Is it just a random person drawing random lines around the map?
Probably.
Okay, so I'm not even going to bring it up. I mean, it looks like the ones that are being found, it's hard to tell, but it does seem like they are South Austin. Do we know what the original Waymo map was? Original Waymo Austin map. Because I know they've expanded. I can't see it. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see. I know a bunch of people are flying down. So the usual suspects, your Chuck Cooks, your Omars, the gang's coming down. I think Chuck Cook's actually going to be here today. So that's fun. That's going to be a really good one to get. Yeah, man, it's exciting. It's so exciting. It's like, I can't believe it's real.
It's over. It's done. It is time.
Speechless.
I am speechless.
Yeah, this is it. Oh, that's fantastic. See, all that shit we were getting for those headlines, it was all for this, okay? It was the seasoning of the audience so that once this actually dropped, it all made sense. It all made sense.
What do you read about the whole person in the passenger seat having the safety rider? So they don't have a safety driver, they have a safety rider, like a chaperone.
Safety monitor, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. What do you think about that?
I love the cope. I love it. I love it so much. We are now at the stage of, you know, and from it'll never happen, it can never work, they can never offer paid rides to, well, it's not really unsupervised yet.
Yeah. There's just nobody in the driver's seat.
Yeah. It will continue to be they can't because until they're the biggest ride hailing platform on planet Earth.
It is so wild how that is. It really does blow my mind the level of cope that this company attracts.
And the cope is the alpha for us retail investors who have done enough research to understand that it is cope. Like, if the cope is founded and it's not actually cope, it is legitimate skepticism, like Nikola is never going to be a real company, then you don't want to get in that crazy hype and feel like, oh yeah, these are just the haters, and invest your money in a company, especially when it gets all frothy, that ends up going to zero. But on the other hand, if you're willing to go down the deep, dark rabbit hole of doing the research for yourself, especially if you're willing to pony up the money to buy the car and experience FSD for yourself, then you know, this car actually does drive itself. It doesn't drive everywhere all the time perfectly, but it drives itself and it keeps getting better. And if it just keeps getting better, eventually it'll drive itself better than me, which already happened basically.
Yeah.
So when you realize that, and then you're like, oh yeah, no, that's legit cope. Like, these people, they just hate Tesla for some reason. And
they hate Elon.
They're skeptics. that cope is the alpha that like allows you to buy shares in the company at a discount relative to what they're actually worth, because people don't believe that Tesla can execute on these things. Now, I say that, and then on the flip side, I also say, based on the valuation of Tesla today, the market agrees that Tesla is the most likely automaker to capture the largest percentage of autonomous miles in the future, because it's by far the biggest market cap automotive company in the world. And, you know, automotive company, it is an AI company. And, you know, they're receiving multiples that do assign a higher than average probability Tesla will be able to make a bunch of money on autonomous miles. The question is just how much money. So yeah, but in all that to be said, if you know, the opportunities to invest into transformational long-term companies don't exist without people who hate it and are skeptical of it. And so you can't use the fact that there's hate and skepticism as a justification not to research, not to look into things, and not to invest. But the opposite is also true. Just because people hate on it doesn't mean that it's going to work either. You know, a lot of times that skepticism and hate is justified. So you've got to, like, the reason why investing can provide a lot of value is because it weeds out the people who don't do the work. And a lot of people are lazy. And if you're not willing to do the work, then you're going to have a really tough time, because you're just going to get swayed by what everyone else feels in the moment.
How many years has Tesla retail spent on this story for it to come to fruition? Been 8 years at least, right?
Yeah. Just on this.
Yeah. And it's been a lot of surviving ridicule, surviving personal attacks, surviving a CEO who likes to put out timelines that are constantly wrong. And you even through that, you still have to believe your eyes. Like, literally every force is against you. Even this company, the company CEO, from time to time will be a force against your own eyes, because it just doesn't, you know. I think it's another one of those lessons where the intuition that we had early on was that this is going to be the improvement is not going to be linear. It's going to be exponential, because that's what these neural nets are for the system to do. So, you know, we've used the AlphaGo example in the past, right? We've used all these different systems that use neural nets where they go from terrible to okay to better than a human to godlike. Like, it appears like it kind of happens overnight. So nothing kind of happens, and then all of a sudden it's like gone. It's like completely beyond, right? These chess engines, the same thing, Stockfish, et cetera, et cetera. You know, all the other systems playing AlphaGo, and we already mentioned that one. So it's like, it's another one of those lessons that says it's appropriate to use learnings from a adjacent field using the same fundamental structure, the same fundamental approach, to try to predict if this system will work or not, right? And now we have, you know, again, granted that the testing will go well, granted that, you know, we make it out alive on Sunday and whenever, when, you know, however often you write this, et cetera, et cetera. But I think we're at the point now where knowing how much hate Tesla gets in public, knowing how much hate Elon gets, knowing how much scrutiny Elon gets, knowing how many enemies he's made in politics to launch this, right? To launch this and actually have it go live, it's, you know, it's either an exercise of one last ditch effort, like magically make the brand relevant again, or it's a culmination of the data points and the real world experiences we've been monitoring for years actually bearing fruit. And it's actually bearing fruit. Thank you to the sponsor of this podcast, Rebellion Air. Now, we know a lot of you are Tesla fans, and especially Tesla investors. And if you have more than $1 million of Tesla stock, Rebellion Air could be the perfect fit for you. Rebellion Air is an investment firm that helps Tesla investors reach their financial goals. They do this by helping you plan for your future, and they also institute strategies like trimming and adding, covered calls, etc. So if you're somebody who believes that Tesla has long-term potential, these kinds of strategies could maximize the number of shares you have by the time Tesla reaches those goals. And the guys at Rebellion Air do this by doing so much research on the Tesla story, and they do a lot of novel research as well. Things like doing cross-country full self-driving trips to really gauge and truly understand the capability of that specific software. They've done really novel research around the energy side of the business and other parts of the business as well. And so instead of dealing with a typical investment firm that may give you the cold shoulder by viewing your investment as too risky, the guys at Rebellion Air will help you reach your goals while fully understanding the Tesla story. And so if you're a Tesla investor and you have more than $1 million of shares, and you're interested in finding out more about Rebellion Air, I have a link for you in the description in the comment section below. You can go to rebellionair.com/Farzad, and that's how they'll know that we sent you. And now back to the podcast.
I 100% agree that it is actually bearing fruit. And I do agree that, you know, these, on a relative basis, these things go from being worse than a human by far and all the skepticism to then being dramatically better than a human in relatively short order. But I think we do need to contextualize what it is that Tesla's doing here, that all of the AI systems that have been built up to now that have reached that superhuman level have been within a context of basically text data, right? That, you know, you can process, whether it's a chess engine or ChatGPT or any of these things that these AI systems are really good at, they're operating in the realm of things that can be described by text. And that this in so many ways is similar to, you know, the 1990s era of the internet or the pre-Windows 95 era of personal computers, where you've got some stupid command line interface and you have to learn how to use MS-DOS in order to do anything on your computer. And it's just incredible that Tesla has achieved the level of safety performance with this neural net technology in an environment where it has to operate purely on video inputs. And so they are really pushing the bleeding edge of what is possible with neural nets in the context of, you know, like the information density of text is going to be a lot higher than, well, it's hard to explain this, I guess, but just think about text versus audio versus video and the process that we had to go through in the internet to have enough bandwidth in order to be able to download a song. You know, it used to be from when you're on Kazaa or Napster, or whatever, it would take you like 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour to download a couple of minutes worth of music. And then how the heck, if it takes that long just to download music that's not that data intense, man, video is like never going to happen. Right. Except that it absolutely is going to happen because Moore's law is driving the, you know, the fundamental improvements of all of these systems. And everything had to get better. You know, the modem in your computer had to get better. The network switches had to get better. The ability to transport information long distances through cable and then fiber optic and all that stuff had to get better. And every single one of those problems had to be solved in order for YouTube to be possible. You know, I think right now with neural net based stuff, that this is like the very early signs of what's going to be possible with things that operate in the video context. And because Elon and Tesla are so far at the forefront of developing that type of a system at scale, I think that it might take us longer than we are hoping for in order for, you know, Tesla to be able to roll out robo-taxi network at the scale of hundreds of thousands or millions of vehicles at those superhuman safety levels, because there's a lot of infrastructure to build up around, you know, making all of that stuff work that well at the latencies that are required. And so I think we're there in terms of ready to start this process. We're there in terms of this technology absolutely will solve this problem. And it could also be, you know, 18 months at least before the network is able to reach the type of scale that a lot of us are assuming is going to happen by the end of the year.
Okay. But are people assuming that by the end of the year? I mean, so it's still just a year and a half away.
Yeah. Or, that, you know, exactly. Yes, exactly. It's still going to happen. It might just happen a little bit slower. And yeah, 18 months compared to the last 8 years that we've been doing instead of 6 months. Like,
let me rephrase it. So it's obvious it's going to happen within a year and a half. Whereas before, like, you know, like the struggle with this whole thing has been like, when? The thing has always been like 2 weeks, 6 months, definitely within a month. And then it just has been pushed out and pushed out and pushed out and pushed out. But now with this launch in Austin now, and knowing what we know about the rate of progress and the compute ramp, et cetera, now we have points on the dot that we can actually like start to plot out. And so now there is a lot of confidence around that statement of like worst case 24 months, literal worst case 24 months.
Yeah, that's, I would say the way that I feel like handicapping it just from my gut feel, and I tend to be on the conservative side on this thing, is that we should really be able to have no safety drivers in the car, relatively minimal remote supervision, to where we can be reaching tens of thousands of vehicles worth of scale in 18 months. I think that's like 80% likely. And then 20% that maybe it gets pushed out farther than that 18 months. There is also, on the flip side, there's a 20% chance that, man, like, we just have to do some validation here for a little while that the next version 14 level that they have installed on these robotaxis is just insanely good. And the safety level is off the charts, and that we just have to be cautious so that we can validate it. And then, you know, a month from now we can do a 10X of our 10 cars. And then a month after that, it's another 10X. And then a month after that, it's another 10X. And then you're, you know, in the thousands of cars by the end of the year type of scenario. Like, that's definitely possible. I would say that's a lower probability than it taking longer than that. But yeah, like, it's happening, and it's happening definitely ultimately. It's happening way faster than anyone else can make it happen. There's no one else who is even remotely close to being able to offer this service at high levels of scale before Tesla will reach that scale. And it's going to be a network effect business where the first person to establish the most network effects is going to have a massive advantage in the marketplace.
Yeah, exactly it. And that, so like to put it in perspective, for the next 12 to 18 months that Tesla is going to be scaling the network to where it's most everywhere to most people, right? Waymo is going to add 3,000 cars to its network. That's literally exactly what's going to happen, you know? So Waymo will add 3,000 cars and Tesla will be everywhere. And it will, and so by that logic, We will know if that's becoming true if by sometime by the
and
end
Uber
of
will add a fraction of that 3,000 cars.
And exactly. And Uber will add a fraction of those 3,000 cars. Exactly. So we'll know if we're on the pathway of that, if within the next 12 months or so, Tesla has overtaken Waymo's rides per week, right? And then in the markets where it's available, like Austin, LA, SF, wherever, New York, Orlando, wherever they go live, they start seriously eating into the market share of rideshare, period. Just like how Waymo has eaten into market share of rideshare in SF and now has more rides than Lyft, which is an unbelievably awesome achievement by that company. I mean, like, truly unbelievable. Like, truly, truly unbelievable. But it is the example of why this use case is so disruptive is that even a, like, a, I'm going to call, can I call Waymo a legacy self-driving company? Can I do
sure.
it?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. In the way that legacy self-driving companies, even with their complexities and their cost structure and their approach with the technology, which is sort of like hodgepodge, let's brute force it, it works. Let's make be clear. It works and they were first to market and they should have every prop imaginable for that achievement. But they're in a box. They are in a box and they're still beating one of the two rideshare companies in the markets that they're offering.
Yeah, I mean, the way that I look at Waymo is that it is still a prototype company and a prototype service. And obviously, yeah. Tesla is also still in the prototype service when it comes to robotaxis specifically. But the challenge, just like Elon always says, is, you know, prototypes are easy, production is hard. Elon has obviously been thinking about the production is hard. Like, how do we make the production is hard phase of offering millions of miles of autonomous ride hail service per day as easy as humanly possible?
Yeah.
He's been thinking about what is the ultimate end state of a successful ride hail company for probably a decade or more.
Yeah.
And they have proactively taken the routes that they think make that reality a reality, you know, that, that hypothetical service a reality as quickly as humanly possible. Yeah. And, you know, offering the prototype service the first is not a guarantee that the prototype that you built is a prototype that can scale. And that's, you know, all of us who've been following this for so long and think about the way that Waymo is approaching this versus the way that Tesla is approaching it, realize that if, and it is still somewhat of an if because we haven't seen it, but if Tesla can offer the same quality of ride hail service that Waymo can offer, but they can do it the way that they're approaching the problem, like you've said many times, with a computer that's way cheaper, with sensors that are way cheaper, and with a car that literally comes off the end of the manufacturing line ready to go, instead of has to be built by some other company somewhere else that sucks at a lot of different things that you don't get to control. And then you take that and you send it to another factory and then you build a whole bunch of stuff on it from a sensor standpoint. And then you wire it up for your computer and you got to use a way bigger computer and. Well, then obviously, if the Tesla comes off the end of the line ready to be a self-driving car, and the Waymo doesn't, then the Tesla is going to be able to operate much more cheaply than the Waymo. Yeah. And, you know, last time I checked, Uber and Lyft was all about, like, no one cares if they're riding a Lyft versus an Uber. All they care about is how long did it take to pick me up? How long did it take to get there? What did it cost? And how bad was the experience of interfacing with this driver?
Yeah.
You know, did they drive like a maniac? Did they stink to high heaven? Were they rude to me? Were, you know, was I just trying to...
Was the car disgusting?
Yeah, was the car disgusting? Was I just trying to concentrate on doing some work and they wouldn't shut up?
Yeah, yeah.
That's like, what Jeff Bezos is awesome when he talks about, what are the things that are never going to change? Like, are customers ever going to want slower deliveries? Are they ever going to want to pay more in shipping? Like, no, obviously not. So the same will be true for ride hailing. Is a customer ever going to want a car with a smellier human who's ruder, who gets in their face, a service that takes longer to pick them up and yeah. costs them more? No.
It's pretty obvious that the service that... Okay, so let's make a statement. The variables that will ensure a ride hailing company will be the winner is the one that can offer the lowest wait times and the lowest costs and the best in-car experience. Is that a fair statement?
100%. And it's going to be, you know, some complex combination of those three factors.
Yeah. But if ride hailing service can offer those three, okay.
Guaranteed win.
Guaranteed win, right? So we can, okay. Which one's going to be more likely to do that? The company that has drivers or the company that doesn't have drivers?
Obviously, the company that doesn't have drivers, at least in the United States. This actually maybe not be true as much in a market like China, where the cost of the driver, I mean, the biggest challenge with the driver is the cost of the driver. The other factors are also somewhat important, but the biggest factor is the cost. And so,
but I do think it's
where then, you know, maybe it takes a lot longer.
Yeah, but at some point, privacy is a premium too.
Eventually.
Right? Eventually. I think, and what's interesting about like the launch of this thing, like what I'm really interested to see is how much this thing's going to cost. Well, I mean, we'll get that on Sunday. We'll see it. That's going to be a trip. Like literally, it's going to be a trip. You're going to have to pay for it, right? I think they're probably priced similarly with Uber and Waymo to start at the very, because they wouldn't need to charge any less to kick it off. Or they could, or from the get-go, they could go straight up and be 20% under market, Uber and Waymo. I mean, it will help them with adoption if they feel like they're not getting enough riders. But if they're starting small to begin with, you know they're going to use that pricing lever to stoke demand, right? So they can align with their supply.
Let me make sure I understand what you're saying. Are you saying they're going to have pricing that's higher than Uber and Waymo to begin with while they don't have enough supply cars that they are willing to operate the service on?
I think they will start at a price that's somewhere around the market average, and then they will pull the pricing lever as needed.
So I think the gating factor on this is going to be their safety ramp for a while. I think that once we get to the point where they're willing to have as many cars on the road as Uber, that the price will be at or below Uber's price.
For sure.
I think there is an early window where when they first are willing to open it up to the entire public and not just this early access program, or, you know, who knows how they're going to, like, Tesla has different options on how they can pursue this. Maybe they only do invite-only access all the way until they have enough cars and they just continue to, like, expand the people that they've given the early access to until they have as many cars within the Austin metro area as Uber, or, you know, some maybe half or a quarter, whatever it is. And then they are willing to open it up to absolutely everyone. And then they do use, you know, pricing. But another option they could pursue is they could launch the service to the public before they have enough cars to fully saturate the market. And they can use pricing as not the lever to get people in, but the lever to keep people out. They can raise prices, which is what we've seen them do with FSD, for example.
Right.
That they've really wanted to limit, you know, they had more than enough data. So the thing was, if we've got enough data to develop the system, we don't need more FSD drivers. And so we want to keep people out, not in, because we want to maximize the safety of the system and minimize the number of people that might accidentally or might have an accident on FSD. So that is, you know, that's one potential scenario. I think that that's probably a lower likelihood. I think maybe the pathway of just keeping it invite only, and expanding the invitation access is probably more likely, because I think it's a better customer experience than, like, you don't want to put a bad taste in people's mouth that, hey, I wanted to use the system and it cost me double what an Uber. And then that person just in their mind checks out on Tesla Robotaxi for, you know, 2 years or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, for how long has Tesla has had to fight the stigma of Teslas are too expensive? Oh, like the Model Y is $38,000.
What?
Oh, by the way, that's the one that's driving itself in Austin.
Huh?
You know, that's a very good point. But I do think that there is an opportunity for Tesla, the company, to make additional margin on the service. If you have the best ride hailing offering, I think on average Tesla will definitely have, you know, outside of like some Uber use cases that are like you're paying $50 a mile or whatever the hell you want to pay. Like you get picked up in a Bentley in Miami or something. Maybe that's better than a, but even then, like there's a stolen driver. Do you really want to pay that? You know what I'm saying? Like it literally breaks the equation of what it means to be taken from point A to point B. But you know, like for example, that study that came out, did you see like Waymo, Uber, Lyft? There were they polled all these different rideshare people in California, Arizona. People are willing to pay a premium for the self-driving car. They are willing to pay a premium for the privacy and the technology and riding in a cool car.
I wish they had broken it out by sex too. Like, are women on average?
Men are mostly more likely
to be willing to take the Waymo?
Yes.
The self-driving car? Oh, that's interesting. I mean, I guess I almost would have wondered.
It's viewed as a techie product. Yeah,
that makes sense. But I think this is probably just an awareness problem. I think that once women understand, oh, wait a second, like it is good enough to keep you safe and you don't have to ride in the car with a random strange dude, that will be increasingly compelling as a reason to take the self-driving cars.
I agree. I think so. When I was on Publix's leading indicator, what was the last week, I did an interview with them, and the woman I was speaking to that was interviewing me, I believe she lives in SF, and she said she's been using Waymo for a while. And I asked her like, how do you like it? Like, how do you like the privacy aspect? Like, she's like, actually, that's one of my favorite things, is that I feel safe. Like, there's nobody else in the car with me, you know. And that's it was, I think if I off memory, I think 54% of all rideshare respondents would have been willing to take a self-driving car today, males, and female were 38%. So they're in the middle, like the middle huge portion was not sure.
Yeah.
Mostly because of price. It was mostly a price thing. And so like the biggest thing that would get people to go from an Uber, Lyft to a self-driving car was if the price of the service was the same or lower and the wait times were the same or lower.
Or lower. Yeah. Yeah. That's the vast majority of people are going to fall into that bucket. That, you know, it's just value. Like, which one saves me the most money and time? Like, money and time, the combination of those two things. If you can save people both money and time, that's a huge win.
A huge one.
Yeah. I mean, the other safety aspect, I think, will be if they conducted that same poll today after all the Waymo burnings, like, does that impact the way that people feel about, well, hey, I would be perfectly comfortable in driving in one of those things unless someone's going to vandalize the car while I'm in it. Now I'm afraid.
Yeah.
So that's going to be another factor that is a wild card in adoption.
That's more a commentary of our society than the technology.
100%.
Right? That would be like, okay, what's going on? That we can't even have self-driving cars as a society because people will torch them, right? I agree.
You're totally going to have there's going to be a group of protesters who they're like going to protest the self-driving cars specifically. Like, how dare you take a car that doesn't have a human driver? You're taking away people's jobs.
I agree. But you know what's funny about the Tesla situation is that it's over time, it's going to be very difficult. Like, even when it launches, it's going to be very hard to spot those suckers because you're going to have to be looking for somebody not in the driver's seat.
Because they're going to look just like the other model, you know, millions of Model Ys that are on the road.
So for the first time, it's going to be hard to like spot them, you know, which is such a fascinating thing of thinking about. Like, this launch is like where every other self-driving car, like the Waymo, I think I told this story on camera, is like when I was driving in the city a couple weeks ago, like you could tell there was somebody that just flew in from the airport and they're probably from like, I don't know, like some random place in the Midwest, and they flew in and there was a Waymo in front of them and we're at a light. Okay, yeah, BFE. And there was a Waymo in front of them and I, you know, we're at a light and they're on my right and I'm looking over and they're just like, you can tell, like, just tailing the Waymo everywhere it goes, right? And it's so funny to me. And I'm like right next to them and I have the Cybertruck on FSD and mine's doing this exact same thing. And the guy has no idea. And I was like, wow, this is so fun. This is so fun. And it's funny, right? Because like the whole, like the around these parts in Austin and a lot of parts in the country, I think nowadays, like the whole Cybertruck shape has become, you know, pretty, like people are used to it now. It's not become this like statement piece of like, what the hell was that kind of thing. But the Waymo is for a lot of people, you know? And I could see like it was stuck behind a bus, and I could see the guy. He's like, oh my God, what is he going to do behind the bus? And then it went around the bus and everything. It was fun. It was really cool to see, but yeah, I'm so freaking excited. Like, I can't believe it's happening. I'm so freaking excited. I am so curious to see what that geofence area is going to be. I really am curious because I think... Yeah.
And I want to know, what's the geofence area? How many cars and how many people did they let into the early access program? And yeah. Then what I want is Tesla. Okay, give us all of those numbers and then put them on a chart and chart them every single week. We want to know. We want the data.
Yes. Everybody at Tesla, if you're watching this, which you know, all of you watch our show, okay?
Because you don't have anything better to concentrate on besides...
Yes, you have nothing else to do. You're not launching a robotaxi network. You're watching the show, okay? Yeah, man. It's, what was I going to say? I left my brain. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, you were talking about, you want to know what the coverage area is. What's the service map? So I don't know if that was...
Yeah, so it's supposed to be on the map, which I still haven't received.
Yeah.
They said to reply to the email, and then they'll send us the app. It looks like it's going to launch with a different app to start, which kind of makes sense because they'll put it on test flight. And then I think once it goes out of early access beta, then they'll probably just dump it into the regular Tesla app and then have it, you know, if you're in the geofence area and you go to the robotaxi section, it will say, you know, or if you're in a non-approved area, we'll say check back soon, you know, to see if it's going to be available in your area, et cetera, et cetera. And now the question is going to become like, how long is it going to take for Tesla to go from, because these are obviously going to be in-house fleet cars. They're going to be ones that they own and manufacture and they operate. How long until they start allowing customers to add their cars to their fleet? And I don't think they do that until the safety level is at such an unbelievable level that they allow those folks to add their cars. So this is probably going to be like a late next year in certain markets to start. You know, like Austin will probably be one of the first ones. Hey, if you live in the Austin metro area, if you're living in Texas, if you live in the state of Texas, you can now add your car to the Tesla fleet and you can start making money. And that's going to be another one. And then while all of this is happening, everyone with a Tesla will be like, hey, here's unsupervised self-driving. You still have to be behind the steering wheel and pedal in case you need to take over, but now you don't have to pay attention. And the car will let you know when you have to pay attention. That's coming too. That's obviously coming here in the coming months. So what a time.
So new question for you.
Yeah.
What is the likelihood that the launch of the Tesla Robotaxi network over the next 6 months is a huge tailwind to vehicle sales? Do you think that people are going to be like, oh crap, and both vehicle sales and FSD take rate?
I just don't see how it can't be. I don't see how this is detrimental, and I don't see how this is neutral.
You're such a bootlicker.
I like to call it logical. All right. I feel like if the best selling car in the world cannot drive itself, that I've said this statement multiple times, right? The best selling car in the world that costs less than $40,000 to purchase can now drive itself, actually fully drive itself. How is this not some sort of demand lever? How is that not a demand lever? So it becomes some sort of awareness gap issue if it doesn't materialize, or maybe it's so like weird and like scary or just batshit crazy that people are just don't resonate with that idea, you know? And so it doesn't do anything with sales. It doesn't do anything to sales. I mean, but what could happen, like, here's where Tesla now has an opportunity come the Super Bowl, right? So I am for Tesla doing one commercial a year. And that one commercial is in the Super Bowl. And given that unsupervised self-driving is here, right, starting in 2 days, and it should start propagating nationwide to where a customer who buys a Model Y, let's say, can download FSD and have the car drive them anywhere they want without them having to pay attention, that is the easiest 30-second ad of all time. Buy your Model Y today for starting at $38,000, and this car will take you anywhere from parking spot to parking spot without you having to pay attention. Buy now, Tesla.com. Is that not going to do anything to sales? I think that's going to do something to sales, right? What do you think?
Yeah, I guess I agree. I'm a total bootlicker. I don't know how this doesn't improve sales. And in particular, I want to see the improvement in FSD take rate. Like, to me, it is obvious that
it's at a point now when people use it, they can't live without it. I've heard many, many people now, like Amit as the perfect example, who has been like a total like whatever Tesla guy. And now is like, I cannot live without FSD. I will not give up my subscription. So it's become this sort of like sticky thing that when people are getting in their car, they and it goes away, they can't live without it.
Yeah.
That's huge. That's huge.
I mean, I don't know how you don't own the package. Like, that's now, I also understand why people, like, $8,000 is a lot of money. If you are one of those people that you want FSD and you don't want to pay $8,000 for it, go right now and buy a used part or a used Tesla from a third party, because they don't really have this, at least last I checked, on Tesla's website anymore. They did for a little while. But yeah, go find used third party one with Tesla FSD on the vehicle, and buy one. If you do it that way, you'll pay a couple of thousand extra dollars over buying the exact same vehicle without FSD on the used market. The used market is about 100% the cheapest premium that you will have to pay to get that FSD package. And then once you own that package on a car, whether it's hardware 3 or hardware 4, you might have to wait a little bit longer to get it upgraded. But they will upgrade you if you own the package outright. If you're on the subscription, that subscription is 100% going to get a lot more expensive for you to be at the very top level of functionality. And they're definitely not going to upgrade your hardware for free if you are just subscribed.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll know that's the, like, we'll know there is demand for that if used car prices for Teslas go up, especially for the ones, I mean, even if they don't have FSD. In theory, they should go up because now those cars can drive themselves, right? So people can opt to get the
and package. Someone can purchase, you know, FSD on a used Tesla and be in.
Yeah. Okay. Sunday. Fun day.
And I mean, the big deal is that we're going to start earning more and more revenue. Like, right now, Tesla is saving money with their autonomous miles because they are not paying an employee to drive them from the end of the line out to the loading lots, the outbound shipping lots. But other than the subscription and the sale of FSD, they're not earning a lot of money on that. But now we're opening up a whole new line of revenue that is this ride hail line of revenue. And between that and growing FSD take rate and profitability, like, this is the source of profits that takes Tesla from being the company we hoped it would be over the last few years to something that's wildly even greater than that.
And then the bot comes.
And then the bot.
Yeah.
And that's, Spider-Man. You know, to go back to what I was saying earlier about FSD being the tip of the spear for useful neural net software that operates natively within video. The bot is where that goes far and wide and to levels that are absolutely insane.
And then while the robotaxi captures the imagination of the broader markets and Wall Street, and they start, you know, in theory, in the next 6 months, we should see a lot of analysts starting to model this out, like, properly, legitly, if that's a word. While they are catching up to that, Tesla's going to start deploying these bots internally, doing work and doing something, right? We're not going to see in the P&L probably for another year or two at least. But then that next leg is going to start being built. And by the time Wall Street has fully caught up to the robotaxi story and its true potential long term, then the bot story is like the foundation has been laid. And now that becomes a similar exercise. And then now just Wall Street has to believe that the story will actually pan out. But I think, you know, said it multiple times, the robotaxi story coming to fruition should be a confirmation that says that Tesla's approach of executing on real world AI works. And the form factor of it is just a different manifestation of the same thing. Now, the humanoid piece will require more compute, and it will require more, it's significantly more complex across many dimensions.
Yeah, I mean, I think you really have to get to the point, the equivalent of having fiber, not or maybe not fiber, maybe at least just cable, you know, high-speed internet as far as infrastructure concerned, in order for the bot to be, you know, super useful in a wide variety of ways. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of hard engineering work that has to happen between here and there, a lot of ecosystem that has to be built up, you know, ecosystem for the manufacture of all the components that go into these robots, the ecosystem for all of the software that's needed to make the robots do useful things. And like, there's, you know, this is a big effort, and it's arguably the largest single product development effort that humans have ever undertaken.
Outside of reusable rockets?
No, it's harder than that.
Yeah.
Bigger, harder. Yeah. Like, because this is going to be, you know, I would say the cell phone is probably the current, you know, one of the current largest product development things. And then probably the automobile before that.
You know,
you've got automobiles, you got PCs, you got cell phones. And this is going to be somewhere up there at that scale. Now, eventually, yes, rockets will, just whatever space travel looks like, you know, a few hundred years from now, it'll be big.
But I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
As a total, like you can just do the math, right? If the global economy, the global GDP is 100 trillion, 40 trillion of that is human labor.
Yeah, I mean, people would have told you back when the iPhone launched that there's no way that, you know, somebody who lives in sub-Saharan Africa could ever afford a smartphone. And yet more people in sub-Saharan Africa own a smartphone today than have access to reliable electricity.
How crazy is that?
And, you know, the humanoid robot, or just artificial intelligence powered robots in general, are going to be the next iteration of essentially that, you know, this is going to get to be something that is so ubiquitous, at such a large scale. You know, the costs are going to come down so dramatically, the capabilities are going to improve so drastically, and it's going to be this kind of leapfrog where it's like, well, you didn't get to have all the things that came before this, but you know, this we can actually be able to deliver to you because it's not dependent on a lot of stuff that came before it. But it is going to, you know, it is going to require a lot more infrastructure too. So yeah. And you know, it's not like the people who have cell phones in sub-Saharan Africa today that they're using, you know, the latest and greatest iPhone 16 Pro Max, but the phone that they have today is a hell of a lot better than the original iPhone.
For sure. Yeah. Exciting. I'm so excited. All right. Sunday. Let's go. Don't come down. Don't ruin the plans for everybody. I'm kidding. Come down. Come on down. Videos.
It's funny because it's true. The one time that I went down for a Starship launch, not only did it not launch, but I wrecked my car. So
yeah,
I don't know. I get nervous about these types of things.
Are you a superstitious person?
You wouldn't think that I would be, but sometimes I wonder.
I mean, that would make me superstitious. It's like one of those things, like, you know, so when I watch Penn State games, Penn State football, I wear the color jersey for which they have on that day. So if they're playing home, I wear blue. If they're playing away, I wear white. And
if you don't, they lose, and it's all your fault.
Yes. Now, they've lost with those jerseys on, but it's rare. But I'm really afraid.
And that's obviously not your fault.
Well, that's not my fault. No, that's the fault of the players and the coach, you know? But when they win with the jersey on. So I dare not try watching a game without a jersey on, because God knows it might, you know, Beaver Stadium might collapse onto itself. They're doing renovations right now. So God, you know, I don't want the worst to happen. Okay. All right. Well, content to come. Super exciting day. This will probably drop tomorrow, so Saturday. And then, yeah, it's going to be exciting. All right. Bye.